Heading on home on a Thursday edition of the Sports Rush. I am Brett Rump, Caleb Hatch of the producer's chair, and we have got you on board with us at 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Big day today. It's NBA draft night. We'll finally find out what the Pacers are going to do with pick number 13. Will they make a pick at 13, or will they trade that pick? There's some new rumors starting to float around that Pacers might deal that pick. We'll tell you the latest coming up in just a couple of minutes. Also, on the way on this show, we continue with our TV Sportscasters Week. This time we go to Wayne 15. Longtime sports anchor Glenn Marini is going to join us. And I believe it is the first time that Glenn Marini has ever been on this program. So it's a big day. It's a historic day. After 5 years plus of the Sports Rush, Glenn Marini is going to be on the show. Also coming up in our next hour, we'll talk plenty of Pacers basketball and NBA draft with Tony East. He's going to join us at 5:20. Tommy Schegler will be along. We've got a number of topics we'll discuss with Tommy, kind of look back at high school football media days and more as Tommy joins us at 5:35. And of course, right now, Twitter abuzz with NBA talk, because tonight's the draft. You've got teams trying to wheel and deal. You've got Houston sitting at number two, but now they know Detroit wants Cade Cunningham at number one, and that's got Houston furious. They're trying to make a deal with Detroit so that they can get Cade Cunningham. Clearly, the teams that have evaluated at the top of this draft have kind of separated those top three, and they've decided that Cade Cunningham is indeed the guy to take with the number one pick. It's just a matter of who calls out that pick tonight. Is it going to be Detroit? Is it going to be Houston? I think Detroit's hanging on to the pick. I think that the Pistons are going to have Cade Cunningham as the number one overall pick. But then you get down to where the Pacers draft. And I kind of feel, Caleb, like looking at some of the names that are available when the Pacers come up at 13, I think there's going to be names fans will get excited about. Whether they pan out, that's one thing. But you don't want to get a pick and then say, who's that guy? Like pull somebody out of Europe, or, you know, get somebody that has a pretty good name, maybe played for an established program in college. You know, we had a lot of talk about Kispert, Duarte, a couple of guys that have been heavily talked about at number 13. I'm not sure, though, that the Pacers are going to make that pick. There are stories right now circulating on Twitter that the Atlanta Hawks are shopping Cam Reddish and the number 20 pick to try to move up to a late lottery pick. Well, that's exactly what the Pacers hold on to, and so it would not surprise me if the Atlanta Hawks trying to deal with the Pacers. Of course, don't forget, who's the coach down in Atlanta? Nate McMillan. Where'd he come from? Indiana. So there is some tie-in, some relationship between those two teams. I don't know. If I'm the Pacers, I think I take the call, and I think I seriously consider it. I think there still will be options for them at number 20. They've kind of proven they're not great at drafting and evaluating talent. So if you take somebody that's already proven, that's a double-figure per-game scorer, that comes from an established college program, that is still young, so he's got plenty of years ahead of him, and a guy that comes at 6'8", 220, which right now the Pacers kind of have that void between guards and Turner and Sabonis. Especially if you start talking about Doug McDermott not coming back, you've got a serious void between 6'5 and 6'10. So I think it's perfect. If you're going to try to find somebody in the East and you think you can become competitive in the East and you want to beat the Brooklyns and the Milwaukees of the world, you got to have somebody on your lineup that can match up, at least attempt to slow down Kevin Durant and Giannis Antetokounmpo, a couple of guys that are almost 7 feet tall that play the wing. At 6'8", Cam Reddish kind of gives you the body and the size that perhaps he could match up. Right now, the Pacers have no one on their roster that can match up with Giannis or Durant. And that's why Giannis has always kind of had a field day against the Pacers. But Milwaukee has pretty much owned the Pacers, dominating them. I think there was one game the Pacers beat Milwaukee, and I can't remember if Giannis even played. What would you do, Caleb? It's on the table. We'll put you in the shoes of Kevin Pritchard, and the Atlanta Hawks are calling saying, Caleb, we'd like to make a deal. We'd like to give you our 20th pick and Cam Reddish for pick number 13. I'd have a tough time with the gamble that you take with draft picks anyway. I think to get a proven commodity and only fall seven spots, I'd take it.
Yeah, I would take it only because the Pacers have just been terrible at drafting. I mean, you look at first round picks over recent years. What you have TJ Leaf. I don't think he's in the NBA anymore, for example. Aaron Holiday is a toss up at best. The only headwaves the Pacers have made roster wise have been through trades, you know, trading Paul George, getting Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis, and trading Oladipo and, getting Caris LeVert, trading cash considerations for TJ Warren. I mean, that's been the steal for the Pacers, even more so than the other two blockbuster trades.
That was a piggyback full of pennies was basically what they gave up for TJ Warren. In fact, I think they almost got money back on that deal because, I mean, it was a crazy transaction. 46862 is a Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Would you take the deal if you're Kevin Pritchard for to give up that 13th pick if the Atlanta Hawks were making a deal, the 20th pick plus Cam Reddish for your 13th pick? That must mean that the Hawks really covet two or three players that they think are the player they're away from making a run at the Eastern Conference. I mean, I don't know who that player would be, if they're looking for another shooter, if they're looking for a young inside presence. I don't know, but apparently the Hawks have become fixated with multiple players because you don't go to a spot in the draft where you know you don't know who the player is going to be. So at like 13, you know there's probably three or four players. But if you look at that list and you say, we can get our guy at 13, but we don't think he's falling to 20, it seems like a lot to give up in Cam Reddish with that 20th pick for you to go up and get 13 unless you are totally sold on what you're getting at 13 and convinced it's going to make you a much better basketball team. I just look at the numbers for Reddish. I don't know if there's any locker room issues. I don't know if there's any type of work ethic issues. Haven't done that much research on it because, quite honestly, it just came out on Twitter a short time ago. So we're still kind of learning the news. But at face value, I would take a Reddish and 20 to get the 13th pick. NBA draft comes up tonight. It's going to be on the ESPN family of networks, ABC television. They're going to go up against the Olympics tonight to try to give us the NBA draft. I don't know if that works. I kind of have a feeling that that'll be one of those where you flash over to the draft to kind of get caught up while the Olympics are on commercial, but then you go back and watch the Olympics because tonight is the women's all-around competition. And I don't want to be a spoiler here, but I'll give you a spoiler alert. I'm going to tell you something about the women's all-around competition that's going to be on TV tonight that's already happened. And if you're going to watch it, you might not want to listen. Sunit Lee wins the gold. Simone Biles out. Mental health issues that she's dealing with. I mean, she was a lock to win the fifth straight women's all-around title for USA. And then Sunit Lee ends up basically taking her place. That means we could have had two gold medalists if they gave two gold medals for the women's all-around competition. And, you know, finally, we've got something to kind of be proud about and cheer about a little bit with these Olympics. I said the other day that I thought it was kind of disappointing through the first three or four days that we seemed to be getting a lot of silvers and some bronze, and the gold medals we won were in sports I've never seen or followed at all. By the way, I did find out. We talked about that fencing gold medal winner over the weekend. You know that there were eight members of the U.S. fencing team, which I also did not realize there were that many members even on our U.S. fencing team. Eight of them came from Notre Dame. So apparently Notre Dame is a national power in fencing.
I knew they were good at fencing. I didn't know they had that many members on the team.
I didn't even know Notre Dame had a fencing program, but now I know, and I know that it's one of the nation's best fencing programs because they have eight Olympians. It's kind of the Notre Dame fencing team competing for USA. We finally got some things to cheer about with these Olympics. Last night, we had the women's 4x200 freestyle. They win gold in the relays. They upset Australia, who was considered almost a lock to win that relay race. As I mentioned, Sunit Lee wins the gold in women's gymnastics all around after everybody kind of thought that the Americans lost their chance when Simone Biles dropped out. You also had Caleb Dressel. I'm sure you like his first name. He spells it a little bit funky. But Caleb Dressel wins gold in the men's 100-meter freestyle. He's fast becoming kind of the... He's becoming kind of the figure everybody's falling in love with during this Olympics. You know, there's always a figure that you don't know going in that becomes like a national celebrity coming out. Caleb Dressel's kind of becoming that guy. When it was swimming, before the Olympics started, I think Katie Ledecky was probably about the only name we knew, other than maybe in Indiana we knew Lily King because of her ties to Indiana. But Caleb Dressel has kind of become a star. He's collecting medals. He finally got an individual gold in the men's 100-meter freestyle. Special moment. He broke down in tears. His family was in tears. And you know what? It's kind of fun to have the camera in the intimate setting of having the families watching from home because most of them couldn't go or couldn't attend the Olympics, so they're watching from their homes. I kind of like it. To me, it reminds me of what we went through with the NFL draft in 2020 when Roger Goodell sat in his basement and we did the whole draft from everybody being in their houses. And it was kind of a unique experience to see the reaction of family and friends that were sharing that moment with the draft picks. It's kind of the same what we're seeing with the Olympics. But it's nice to finally have something to cheer about. 46862 Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Oh my, did you happen
breaking.
To catch...
Breaking news.
Breaking news. We don't
breaking
have,
news.
We have
yeah,
a sounder
sorry.
For that, Caleb.
I'm jumping in. According to Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, the Padres close to acquiring Max Scherzer.
Ooh, hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, that means half the Tin Caps roster is going to go to Washington. Oh, my gosh. What kind of price with the Padres? They were competing with the Dodgers in that deal, and apparently there were a couple of late players. Were the Mets one of them? I know... There's been some late activity on Scherzer, but it seemed earlier today that it was most likely he would end up with a National League West contender. The Padres, AJ Preller, holding back nothing. But everybody on the Tin Caps that has a 200 batting average just got traded to Washington for Max Scherzer. How much would you have to give up for a Scherzer?
No terms. I mean, it's not been finalized, but that is the early report.
Yeah, we
report.
Won't know the names that are included yeah. going the other direction. The only thing that matters right now is it would be Scherzer. So does Rosenthal, is he reporting done deal or?
Close to a
close.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll see. We'll hold our breath during this show to see if we've got any late breaking news on Max Scherzer. Wow. They need him too. Because they've got a couple of spots. You know, Denelson Lamet, who was a former Tin Cap, he's had arm issues. Chris Paddock has been kind of up and down and not been a real steady starter. Ryan Weathers has been up and down. He's pitched in AAA, then with the Padres, then back to AAA, now back with the Padres. And of late, Yu Darvish has been disappointing. He's had, what, two or three bad starts in a row. He got pounded the other night. So... By the Marlins. The Marlins lit up Yu Darvish. So it will be a big pickup for the Padres because they've already gotten Adam Frazier, a big pickup out of Pittsburgh, a guy that was hitting, what, 320, 324? I think he was second in Major League Baseball or in National League in batting average, leading baseball or second in the league in total number of hits. He's right up there at the top of the batting category. So it'd be a huge move if the Padres could get Max Scherzer. Okay, we'll take our break right now. We're going to come back. Caris LeVert appeared on a podcast, The Trade Deadline. Now, have you ever heard of this podcast? Apparently, it's a former player that hosts it. Caris LeVert talked about the experience of being traded to the Pacers and what he found when he got to Indianapolis that shocked him. And we'll tell you what it is, and we'll even play some audio when we come back from the break. It's a Sports Rush Thursday edition on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Back on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Caleb Hatch. Glad to have you on for the ride this Thursday. I've talked to a lot of people this week, a lot of people, Caleb, that have listened to the show or listened to the show, probably more so than I have had in 5 years of going out, dealing with clients, and salespeople. Just had somebody call today, and I'll give you a little, I don't know if I can say it, maybe I can say it. Yeah, because I learned it. Pete Rose, I hear he may be coming to Fort Wayne for a special night. That's all I can say. Can't say more. Can't give you any details. Can't tell you when, where. But the little things that I learn in my little travels during the day as I get around from client to client, that was one of them. I think that'd be great. Can't, I really do want to tell the details, and I can't. All right, so let's talk about Caris LeVert, because he spilled some details. We all know what the Pacers went through last year. We know what was released by the media and what was put out there for the public to see, arguments between players and assistant coaches, a head coach that seemed to have people throughout all levels of the organization not too happy with him. They had to clean house. They had to change a lot of things with the culture of this team. And, you know, Caleb, we have talked about what the locker room's been like. And you know that my personal feeling, and this is just my own personal observation, is that Malcolm Brogdon is more a contaminator than a contributor. Isn't that what Dr. Phil uses? He talks about whether you're contaminating or contributing. And I feel like he's almost more of a contaminator than a contributor, because I think he's been behind rallying support against the last two head coaches. And, well, apparently, I don't know that Malcolm Brogdon was alone. Apparently, if you ask Caris LeVert, who appeared on a podcast, it's called, what's it called? It's called The Trade Deadline, and it's on Twitter. You can check it out. His comments are there, but it's called The Trade Deadline. He appeared on this podcast, and he was asked about what it was like being traded to the Pacers, and Caris LeVert didn't hold back when he gave his response.
It was definitely, like I said, it was very, very, very tough. With, like you said, everybody saw it. There was a lot going on in our locker room. There was a lot of he say, she say this. There was articles coming out about, you know, coach and guys asking to be traded and things like that. And I wasn't used to any of that stuff. Like, we weren't that good my first couple years in Brooklyn, but we didn't have that. We didn't have that sort of turmoil. We didn't have people having a lens on us, seeing what are the Patriots going to do today. Like, it was never that. So that was a different experience for me, for sure.
And remember, he played in Brooklyn, the New York media, and yet he found it to be worse in Indiana when he got here with the Pacers.
Well, remember the teams he was on, those plucky Kenny Atkinson coach teams where they were fighting, you know, for one of the last playoff spots up until this season, you know, when Durant was healthy, and then they got James Harden and then had Kyrie as well. I mean, it was a different environment until this past season in Brooklyn.
But players never had a problem with Atkinson.
No.
In fact, I think they liked playing for Atkinson. Yeah. It was just the ownership wanted to go a different direction and take the team to another level that they felt Atkinson was falling short of, which in my mind, even in hindsight, Atkinson was doing a terrific job with that team.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he was overcoaching a team that had no business even really competing for a playoff spot.
Absolutely. And speaking of coaches, LeVert was then asked about playing for Rick Carlisle. Here's what he said.
Like you said, I've spoke to him a couple times now over the phone. I listened to his opening interview with the team and everything, and I'm super excited to build that relationship and to play for him as a coach. He definitely seems like one of those guys who just has it figured out. So I can't wait to play for. I can't wait to play for him. I think it's going to be super fun. I think it's going to be beneficial for me.
Everybody seems to tell us that we talk to out of Indianapolis that covers the Pacers. Everybody seems to tell us that the Pacers don't have a chemistry issue and the Pacers don't have a culture issue. I tell you what, this is a guy that comes from the outside and he couldn't believe what he was walking into. I really think there's a mix of players that there's just, and I'm not saying they're bad players, you know, but certain guys just click with other guys, and it just seems like there's a little oil and water in that Pacers locker room. 46862. I don't know. How do you take that? I mean, first of all, I think it isn't necessarily of a surprise for us to learn that there may have been issues behind the scenes in the locker room with these Pacers. But is all solved by getting a new coach? Or do you have to continue to pick apart this personnel and try to make some trades to get the right mix together? Because you can't win if you don't have chemistry. That's the one thing that Milwaukee had. They had the culture. They had the chemistry. The players that even came in during the season fit right in perfectly with what they were doing in Milwaukee. The Pacers were not the mix. They apparently they had guys that wanted traded. There were guys that complained. Can the Pacers win with that group of people playing for a different coach?
I mean, the coach is going to help some, but like you said, I mean, they don't have the pieces to compete anyway. I mean, you need to add a superstar player for the Pacers to even have a shot to compete, you know, with the top three or four teams in the East. And they're that missing piece away, and that's a huge missing piece. I mean, you don't just luck into that.
Yeah, exactly. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line 46862. So tonight is the NBA draft. Detroit is the first on the clock, and it does look like Detroit's going to hold on to that first pick. They're going to take Cade Cunningham. All reports, including Woj, who has already dropped it, that Detroit is going to select Cade Cunningham with the first pick. The former freshman out of Oklahoma State, number two. I'm not sure. Will it be Jalen Green? Will it be Evan Mobley? Because what's happened is at number two, the Houston Rockets have become totally infatuated with getting Cade Cunningham. Will Houston trade out of number two if they don't have the chance to get Cunningham? I don't know. But right now, the latest mock draft has Houston with Jalen Green, Cleveland with Evan Mobley, the big man out of USC. Let's look down where the Pacers end up. They're at number 13. And when you get to 13, there's a lot of things that are going to happen between 8 and 12 that are probably surprising. That probably don't fit most of the mock drafts, which means there's always some name that's going to slip. The question is, do you take the safe name, the big name? I think Corey Kispert is probably the guy that would be the safe name. I think you know exactly what you get with Kispert. I think he's a safe pick because I think he's got a pretty good solid floor. The question is, what's the ceiling? At number 13, we've seen in the past, some teams have hit the home run and gotten an all-star, gotten a top 10, 12 player in the NBA out of the number 13 pick. So do you take the gamble, hoping that you score big and hit the, quote, lottery, and get a guy that could potentially become a superstar? Or do you take the safe pick because the Pacers have been so bad at drafting and take a guy like Corey Kispert, who might be limited on how far he can go up, but he's got enough talent that he's not going to fall down? I mean, we already know he's in a better spot than a TJ Leaf or some of these other guys. But again, comes from a successful college program where he had very good teammates around him, excellent coach. To, you know, Mark Few, I don't know. I'm looking at the list. Chris Duarte is a guy that I think is the best pick. Davion Mitchell is the guy that a lot of people are putting with the Pacers at number 13. I don't know if Davion Mitchell is going to be available, the guard out of Baylor. But I will say this about Mitchell. This is a competitive guy. This is a guy that's tough defensively. He's very competitive. I like Mitchell. I'm not sure if because of other teams above them, if he's going to slip to 13. And then the question becomes, how does he fit with a roster that's almost all guards and Turner and Sabonis? I mean, what do? You get another guard, you're more guard heavy. Does that mean you have to make some moves? Give up a couple of your guards that you've currently got on the roster to try to bring in a big man? I guess I'll ask you. I know you always want to get the best player available when you pick as high as number 13. You don't want to fail with a number 13 pick, but if you've got your choice between all three of those guys with Chris Duarte, Corey Kispert, and Davion Mitchell, and all it was about was getting a guy that fit your team, Kispert's the fit probably more so than the other two. Am I right?
Assuming that Doug McDermott leaves in free agency, yes. The problem with Kispert, again, there's no ceiling with that pick. You get what you get. I mean, I'd be thrilled if Davion Mitchell's available, but I don't think he'll be available at 13. I really don't.
To me, it's it's a more athletic, better version of a Kyle Korver, but it's a guy that, you know, Kyle Korver was always a good player. He was always valued as a role player. but he wasn't one of the top 10, 12 players in the league. He couldn't take over and dominate a game by himself. Had to get screens, had to come off screens, you know, and Kispert's probably that guy. I don't know at the NBA level if he's going to be able to create a lot of his own shot. We'll see. But the Pacers right now scheduled to pick number 13. But apparently there are some suitors. There are some people that see the value in that position in the draft. And the Atlanta Hawks right now are offering Cam Reddish and the 20th pick to try to move up to. Now, it's not specific that it's going that it's the Pacers, but trying to negotiate with a team who holds a late lottery pick. That sounds like the Pacers to me. And we already know that the Pacers have turned down the Lakers, who tried to dump off Kyle Kuzma and the number 22 pick to move up to number 13. The Pacers said no thanks. So Kuzma, a no. But Cam Reddish with the 20th pick, I think you've got to maybe at least take the call. Because again, in the East, you've got to look at the teams that you're going to be competing against. And you've got Brooklyn with Kevin Durant. You've got Milwaukee with Giannis. And the Pacers have no one on the roster that can match up with either one of them. If you try to put Miles Turner on him, he's too heavy on his feet. That isn't going to work. You put a guard like Malcolm Brogdon, they get down, they back you in. And just have those little turnarounds right over the top of you. With Giannis, it's maybe more of that little jump hook. With Durant, little turnaround jumper from 8 to 10 feet. So the Pacers need somebody on the roster that can match up with those guys if they think they can contend at all to get in the playoffs and have a chance to match up with them for a series. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. TV Sportscasters Week. We're going to go to Wayne 15, and we're going to get our first chance to visit with Glenn Marini right here on the Sports Rush. He will join us next. We'll learn things about Glenn that you didn't know. Maybe things that he doesn't know, but we're going to dig deep on Glenn Marini when we have a chance to visit with him next right here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Big news that is breaking from Ken Rosenthal is that the Padres apparently are going to win the battle for Max Scherzer. We'll wait and get confirmation on that, but that is the latest report on Twitter from Ken Rosenthal that the Padres just keep adding talent, this time on the hill, Max Scherzer from the Washington Nationals. And so the next time you see the Tin Caps, there may be five players available. You've got to unload a lot of prospects, I would think, to pry a Max Scherzer, especially when there was competition for him. Let's talk about that with our next guest. We've got TV Sportscasters Week this week. We're getting inside our local sportscasters, finding out a little bit more about each one of them. And so it's our pleasure today to welcome, I believe, I'm trying to remember if this is his first appearance. It's been 5 years, so I've slept since then. I don't remember everything. But Glenn Marini from Wayne 15 joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Glenn, welcome to the show. Is this time number one?
Man, your memory is better than mine. I can't even remember what I had for lunch today.
That's me.
We talked once in Sioux Falls, I think.
Okay.
We were both out there for some Mastodon hoops. But
oh, man, that was a long time ago.
This will be the lowest rated segment in the history of the Sports Rush right here. Coming up. Calling it.
No, I'm confident it won't be, but man, I'm going to ask some questions of you that you might hope it is. Hey, let's talk about this Max Scherzer news. The Padres have become super aggressive in what was a farm system loaded with talent that helped supply some really good players that have come through Fort Wayne. All of a sudden is being used as leverage to pull in some big name talent at the major league level with the Padres. AJ Preller has kind of reversed course in the last couple of years. This is huge news, I think, for anybody who's a Padres fan to hear Max Scherzer may be going out to San Diego.
Yeah, AJ Preller rolling the dice again. Certainly not afraid to do it. And, you know, like you, I'm always kind of keeping an eye on who some of the prospects are, see if they're guys that we've seen here in Fort Wayne. So, you know, as a Cubs fan, I'm also waiting to see Bryant and Rizzo's name across the bottom line on ESPN or something like that, flashing that they've been traded somewhere to the Mets and maybe Red Sox, respectively. But, yeah, AJ Preller, I'm sure you got a chance to talk to him when he was in town a couple years ago. I mean, he's kind of got that Hollywood, California look to him. But he is a wheeler-dealer, baseball mind. And, you know, it's been cool to see guys come up through here, not just the Tatises, but guys like Patino, who was traded to Tampa Bay in the Snell deal, and some of the guys that got traded to Cleveland to bring Clevinger over. I wish the Padres would move about 1,500 miles closer so we could keep a better eye on these guys, but it's been pretty cool to see how many guys from Fort Wayne are involved, or that played in Fort Wayne, have been involved in some of these major deals that the Padres have made over the last couple of years.
Speaking of the Cubs, Glenn, the Cubs do not have Anthony Rizzo or Chris Bryant in their lineup today. What does that mean?
Well, I read the pregame interview with Ross, and he said that didn't have anything to do with the trade deadline. And I'm like, right. I imagine one. Now, Rizzo, this is his first day off since the All-Star break. And then Bryant had to play a bunch, played the shortstop the other day, played a bunch of innings. So apparently his legs are a little worn down. But it just seems too coincidental that the trade deadline would be one day away and that they're not playing today.
Yeah,
even though it's a day game. I mean, you got to say the right thing,
yeah.
Right? But let's read between the lines on that.
Yeah, and I wonder when the last time was that Rizzo and Bryant were not in the lineup, like one or the other was not in the lineup when they were both out the same day, because I don't remember it.
Yeah, something that wasn't injury related. I don't know, but it's to me, this is the part that I hate about professional sports, is because when you draft a guy like Chris Bryant, he does all the things that you want him to do. He's a rookie of the year. He's an MVP. He brings a World Series there. And now you're saying, well, maybe we're not going to be able to afford him. It's like, well, why'd you draft him? This is what you hoped he would be. This is the absolute best case scenario. And now you're saying, I don't know that we can keep him.
Yeah.
So it reminds me kind of like of the Paul George situation with the Pacers. It's like you draft this guy and you want him to make this progress to where he's a perennial all-star. And then you're like, well, we can't afford him. And if you're the Cubs and you're in Chicago and you can't afford him, who can afford him? I mean, just the Yankees or...
Who's willing to spend the money? I don't know if it's that they can't afford him.
Well,
it's that they
true.
Want to pocket
that's
the cash
true.
Themselves. That's the whole thing.
You got that Jason Hayward contract still.
Yeah.
With a millstone around the neck. But, yeah, it's just disheartening that a guy that you draft and develop into a perennial all-star is a guy that you're not going to be able to keep when he's right in his prime.
Yeah, and you can kind of think about that with the Cubs and look at what Chris Ballard's doing down in Indianapolis with the Colts, the total opposite of that.
Oh,
he wants to home grow talent, and he wants to be able to reward them with big contracts. He's already started to dish them out. Braden Smith is the latest to collect. He gets that big deal at right tackle, but it also kind of establishes a bar. They're going to have a lot of money between Ryan Kelly and what they gave him, what they've now signed Braden Smith, and I think the most expensive one's still coming in Quentin Nelson.
Yeah, and Darius Leonard. Those guys are both due for big deals. Leonard sooner than later because he's in his fourth year on the rookie contract. So they're not as pressed with Nelson because he's got the fifth year. But, I mean, when I saw the $72 million to Smith yesterday, I was like, what are they going to have to spend on Quentin Nelson? I mean, and he's worth it. You know, he's the best guard, one of the top offensive linemen in the NFL. And again, there's a guy you draft, and you hope he turns into Quentin Nelson. Like, you hope he escalates his game like that. So if you're not going to keep him, it'd be crazy. But, I mean, they're going to have to write serious checks to him and to Darius Leonard. And, you know, $72 million to Braden Smith is going to seem paltry when you talk about those other two guys. So, yeah, he's got to get out the checkbook. But that's what you hope happens. Is that they become superstars.
Glenn Marini from Wayne 15 joining us here on the Sports Rush. Glenn, you mentioned you're a Cubs fan. Where do you come from? Where's your hometown?
So I'm from Muncie. You know, it's an hour down the road. My parents both worked at Ball State, so I am from the Muncie area. That's still sort of home to me. But we used to come up to Fort Wayne. We play baseball against teams from up here, and then in high school, you know, different teams. So I was pretty familiar with Fort Wayne when we moved here. But, you know, we've been here 13 years now, and both my daughters have been born here, and we don't really have any inclination to move. We love it here. And my wife's from Arkansas, and she loves it more than I do. So I at this point, you know, it's funny. I was talking to another guy a month ago, Adam Schenkel, and he was like, I always thought you were from here. And I'm like, well, kind of am. I'm from an hour down the road. So That's that's where I'm from. But I went to school at Miami of Ohio, and then got a job in Kentucky out of college at a TV station. Got a job in Arkansas at a TV station after that. Stayed there for a little while because my wife was from there. Got married and then wanted to come back to Indiana. And here I am 13 years later.
So what were the sports you played when you were growing up in Muncie? Did you play, you said baseball was one of your high school sports?
Yeah, so in high school I went to Muncie Burris, so really small. There's 48 kids in my graduating class. We didn't have football. I played soccer, basketball, and baseball. So it was, 24/7, 365, really big into sports. Played travel soccer, was looking to play soccer in college. Got a look at a D3 university, Hanover, down in southern Indiana, but decided to go to Miami of Ohio instead and not play there. And graduated there in 3 years. That was kind of the plan because it was out of state and a little pricey. So, especially when I could have, gone in the backyard to Ball State. So that was kind of our deal. If we're going to write a bigger check there, better make it a shorter time. So, yes, that's how it all came about. But I get a lot of questions. A lot of people think I went to Ball State because I'm from Muncie and my parents work there. And you work in this industry. And pretty much half our newsroom went to Ball State.
Yep.
But it is not true. 18 years in Muncie did not make me want to spend 4 more years in Muncie. That's how I feel.
So I know you've got this big new set being built out there at Wayne 15, and I'm just wondering, are you still going to be seated behind the desk, or are you going to have to do stand-up sports reports?
This is a very big point of contention right now, because I've done this 19 years, and I've never, ever worn pants behind the desk.
I knew it.
I never worn suit pants unless, it's a special shot for the newscast or you're going to see my pants out in the field. I mean, I got shorts on. I'll wear shorts all summer. So this has been a very contentious point about the new set of whether or not I will have to wear pants. I have many suit jackets and shirts and ties, but oftentimes never bought the pants with the suit. So now I've got to really wriggle in some pants. If you got any pants to donate, bring them up to Wayne TV. Bring them up, because I don't have many pants. I'm thinking about getting the LeBron shorts, where you have the suit jacket and then suit pants shorts.
Yeah, you could do
now,
that.
Now I'm going to be showing off some leg. But
and if you do that, your powers that be out there at Wayne will have you behind a desk faster than you can blink.
Exactly.
Exactly. I see it.
That's the way to work around it.
That was funny because that was my lead-in. I was going to ask you about the new set. Then I was going to ask, do you own a pair of dress pants? Because I just know that's the thing in TV that most people don't get. Whenever you see somebody sitting at a desk, you can almost assume they don't have dress pants on.
Yeah. Well, you watch the guys at ESPN and they'll wear shorts or they will wear jeans or some type of other pants. They're all behind the desk, but I'm a pretty sweaty guy, and it kind of started in Arkansas and Kentucky because it was super hot down there. So you're running around all day. As far as full suits, I only own a handful of full suits. I own tons of jackets. But, yeah, I'm like a mullet. Business on top, party on the bottom. So.
Exactly. What was what's the best event? Do you have one that stands out to you? If I say, what was the one thing you covered that stands above the rest? Something that you just felt like, I saw something special. I just documented something special. I've covered something special.
Oh, man.
Well, is there one that stands out for you?
Yes. It would be the whole Austin Hatch story.
Oh.
So I had gotten to know Austin. We had a friendly relationship before that second plane crash. And so after it happened and after he came out of the coma, we started doing some things with him. We'd already had a really good relationship. And so he would call and let me know when things were happening for him. And there was one time when he got the extra year of eligibility from the IHSAA. He texted me to tell me that. And half a week later, I realized nobody else had reported that. And I was like, I texted him back. I was like, do you want me to, I haven't seen this anywhere else. Do you want me to report this? He was like, that's why I was telling you. People would quit asking me about it. And I was like, oh, okay. That's how genius I am. guy feeds me a story, and I'm like, did you want me to do that?
That is a tough part of the business, though, Glenn, because we do sometimes have relationships with athletes because we both share the same passions. And sometimes I think we avoid telling stories that we learn because we respect the people that we're covering. I mean, it's a difficult line to follow.
Yeah. Were you telling me that as a friend, or were you telling me that reporting-wise? But we've had a lot of in-depth conversations, and I still stay in touch with him. And a couple years ago, when he was doing an event down here, we went up to the Chrysler Center up there in Ann Arbor when he was still at Michigan, and he was like, where do you want to do the interview? And I was like, well, let's do it at the arena. And he's like, cool, I'll get us in. And I thought there would be a bunch of people going around and doing all kinds of things. We got there. It was just me, him, and our photographer. And while our photographer was setting up, it was just me and Austin playing horse at the Chrysler Center by ourselves. And then we sat down at midcourt. I mean, nobody interrupted us or anything. I'm not sure how he got that great access. But, yeah, I remember that. That was pretty cool. And then when he got married, his wife texted me and was putting together, when he graduated, was putting together a book of people that had influenced his life and that he looked up to, and they were all writing letters to him, and she asked me to write one for him.
Wow.
And she was like, you know, Coach Beeline's writing one, so-and-so, and then it was like me. I was like, whoa, I can tell who's on the bottom of this totem pole, but I was just, you know, happy to be asked that, you know, we kind of developed that relationship. So that's one of the things, certainly,
that's
that
neat, that's neat, that with all the big games and state championships, that it's that human interest story that drew you in right away. It kind of tells us something about what makes you passionate about sports. It's the people.
Well, yeah, that's the thing that you'll take away. I mean, I think, you know, we watch the games and that's interesting and all, but a lot of it is the personal stories. And we've had a lot of great stories come out of Fort Wayne, you know. Another one of them is Kevin Kiermaier.
Yep.
You know, I think about the day that he got drafted on the third day of the draft, you know, pick number 941. And I had never met him, and I got his number from his brother and called him up and met him at Bishop Lewis and did an interview outside. And we interviewed five people from that area got drafted that day, and yet he was the lowest pick. And yet here he is, a three-time Gold Glover. So you just never know what's going to happen. We've just had that kind of relationship since where, you know, whenever the Rays are in Chicago or Detroit, we'll go up and chat with them once a year. And so it's been, we've developed a friendship there. And after the World Series last year, we went up and did a sit-down interview at his lake house on Lake Snow up in Steuben County and talked fishing and, you know, talked about life. And so it's one of those things. It's like, you never know what's going to happen. You never know who's going to make it big. I had the same thing with Caleb Swanigan the night he got drafted, to be there and see his family that was there, his brother and his mom, and the way that moment changed the dynamic of their life, to be there for that split second, that moment was pretty cool. I'll remember that more than I'll remember a shot or a game or a win or anything like that.
Always nice to catch up with you, Glenn. Maybe in another 6 years we'll do this again.
Once every 6 years. That's all the viewers and the listeners can handle.
I'm glad Caleb Hatch I'm glad Austin Hatch looked up to you, because I didn't get a call.
Well, I think we were more. I think he was so mature and I was so immature that it actually met on the same level. That's how it works. I always tell my wife, whenever I grow up, I want to be like Austin Hatch. So.
Yeah, and just a quick Austin Hatch story, that I actually had quite a few email exchanges and conversations with his father, unfortunately, just before he passed in the plane crash. And his father was really appreciative of what I was doing to help to cover the high school sports at the time, and the fact that we had covered a couple of Austin's games, and he told me how much he enjoys going back and listening to him and stuff like that. And so just a great family, just a tragic story. And it's just so good to be able to look at a guy like Austin and think, I don't know how he is what he is, because he has to have been given something special to be able to handle what he's handled in his life. So,
To really stay positive touching. Through everything that he's gone through is amazing.
Unbelievable. So, unbelievable. Yeah. All right, Glenn. Well, let's get back to work. Appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again.
All right. Talk to you later.
Yep. Glenn Marini joining us here on the Sports Rush on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. In fact, speaking of Masters Heating and Cooling.
Podcasts by Federated Media.